listening to Orbital Magazine Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Orbital Magazine Podcast. I'm Abby Cheeseman, the editor, and with me today in the studio I've got Deputy Editor Stephanie Bagnall and one of our co-heads of design, Michelle Tile. Today we're going to be discussing our main feature from our October issue, which was Black, Asian and Minority Ethnic Alumni, the Underrepresentation of Black History and Cultural Allyship versus Cultural Appropriation. So where do we want to start, Gills?
So BAME alumni piece was looking into how BAME alumni shaped have been a successful post Roe Holloway and kind of how like there isn't much information about them, and we really wanted to like showcase that. Abby, weren't you really excited by one of our alumni?
Lenny Henry came to Roe Holloway. Like, who had any idea that that was a thing?
For those of you that don't know, Lenny Henry is like a big comic relief person, and he's a great actor and comedian.
Think of the Premier Inn adverts.
Oh yeah,
and
to be fair.
But yeah, so one of the main things that we debated while we were planning this podcast was around the naming of the library and how, given that we don't re-emphasize much of our BAME alumni successes, the fact that Sarah Parker Redmond was a choice on the library naming ticket, and the idea that we stuck with kind of the white feminist route instead of going for Sarah Parker Redmond, which we thought was really interesting.
In the article, Sarah Parker Redmond is mentioned, and she attended Bedford College, which again is another kind of underrepresented portion of Roe Holloway's history. And yeah, it was a choice. I think it came in third place behind George Eliot and then Emily Wilding Davison, of course. And yes, of course, it was like the people's choice.
Yeah, I mean, the democratization of naming the library, I think, was a great move. But there's definitely, I know there's been huge debate around the fact that Emily Wilding Davison didn't graduate from Roe Holloway. Which, I mean, she's still an alumni. I think you have to have been an alumni, you have to have been here for 3 months, yeah, to become an alumni. So she definitely deserved to be on the ticket. We did a really interesting piece by Anya Eastman at the end of last year, where she discussed whether we should be like glorifying Emily Wilding Davison's name
in the fact
that, yeah, and her actions in terms that they were quite violent. Like the whole suffragette movement wasn't without its flaws. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we all very much appreciate their efforts, given that three ladies in this room now have the right to vote. But yeah, so there's definitely an interesting topic to be said there around the underrepresentation of our BAME alumni.
I think it's underrepresentation, but undereducation as well. I think there's a lot of space we can develop this sort of knowledge and recognition of history that should be talked about more often, I think.
Yeah, and actually, when I interviewed Paul Laizel, Principal Paul Laizel, he talked about how he was really glad about the democracy, how we all, like, chose the name, the people chose it, and he said that with the kind of development of campus, that all the names would be used one point or another. Obviously, George Eliot's already been used for the halls, and he's hoping that in the future, like, Sarah Parker Redmond, and I cannot for the life of me remember the fourth name, whoops, that they would also be used.
We'll come back to that.
Yeah, we'll find out, tweet it or something.
So I mean, we just had an email today from the principal about the naming of the science building, the new science building on campus.
Oh yeah.
So you never know. Oh, Sarah Parker Redmond might finally make it in. We might finally get some BAME alumni representation, having a bit more fame on campus, which would be really cool.
It's also really cool in the alumni piece. I found out that Vanessa Kangori, who is an alumni here, she studied marketing and management, and she recently became the first Black female director of British Vogue, like a publishing director of British Vogue. And yeah, she was actually the first female director of GQ in its 30-year tenure and the first Black female to ever be a publishing director in Condé Nast history.
It's incredible. Like, Condé Nast is such a huge publishing company.
I know, right? And it's hundreds of like years old, or 100 years old, I think,
yeah,
just over that. And they have so many publications. It doesn't make sense.
I mean, it's kind of the state of the media in general in terms of that. It's a very
white middle class kind of industry.
Yeah. Diversity in the media isn't at its strongest.
Yeah.
But it's definitely taken a good swing towards becoming more diverse. But in terms of ethnicity and sex as well. Women journalists are becoming more and more in places of power, which is great to see.
Yeah, it's so amazing. Like, I follow so many female journalists on Twitter, yeah. And I'm just like, yes, the power. I love it. It's great.
Look at us. Three journalists, all women. And it's surprising, actually, because Orbital is very heavily female-dominated to the point where we have to really kind of branch out and be like, please, like,
we men, want guys.
We need a bit more diversity in the opposite way, which is refreshing.
Yeah, we actually want, like, other people to kind of give their personal perspectives, because obviously, like, we want guys and, like, non-binary people and stuff to have their, like, personal views represented in the Orbital and things like that, and it's really great to kind of be able to branch out for that.
Definitely.
Yeah. We have such a, like, diverse group of people working for the Orbital always.
Yes, it's great.
Yeah.
Speaking of diversity, like, it leads us in very nicely to one of our other main features that we had in the October issue, which was Emma Hallahan's Cultural Allyship versus Cultural Appropriation. Very aptly, the name of this podcast has been named after it. When is it appropriate to appropriate?
Yes.
Very witty.
It's a great article. I love it.
Can you tell we make headlines?
Yes. So, Stephanie, do you want to tell us a little bit about what it's about?
So basically, Emma talks about, like you said, when is it okay to, you know, delve into these kind of cultures without having a proper understanding of the history, of the real reason why cultures have these sort of attributes and everything. And she discusses, you know, the difference between being offensive and exploring culture in a way that should be appreciated in a right sort of way.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I know when we were looking at doing the photography for the issue, we were trying to think of, how do you photograph cultural appropriation? And we kind of ended up on just being like, anyone who's actually travelled in many ways culturally appropriate. So I've travelled a lot of Asia.
You want to tell us a little bit about your tattoo, Abby?
Yeah, so I mean, I've got a tattoo that says freedom in Chinese that I had done while I was in China. And it would never in a million years when I was having that done have crossed my mind that I was being at all offensive or almost, like, gimmicky with their culture. It was just, I was in China, I wanted a tattoo, it meant something to me, and I was like, oh, it's fine. I was like, it'll be, like, a good memento of my time in China to have it in Chinese. And it does mean what it actually says. I'm not one of those people that's got, like, chicken nugget tattooed on them when they don't know. Had it checked by many people. Michelle has even verified.
Yes, I checked it. It's so good. I don't think it's offensive. I think it's more the problem of, like, tokenization.
Yes.
And about kind of having, like, you know, just picking bits of what you want from people's culture and just being like, oh, that's cute and pretty and whatever. It's very, like, an Urban Outfitters kind of thing. Not that I don't love Urban Outfitters, but...
Yeah, and not understanding, like, the true meaning of the things that you're absorbing and you're taking in as well. You have to understand the reasons why, I think, as well.
Yeah. Exactly that. So me and Michelle are both talking that we have, Buddhists. You've got a poster,
as
you said. Yeah, and I've got, a little keepsake thing that I've got a Myron from my travels when I went to Nepal.
It's like the iconography of it.
Exactly. And we both discussed it and we were like, oh, I'd never have thought of that as being a thing. Like, I really appreciate, I'm not religious, but I really appreciate different religions. So whenever I go travelling, it's always a big thing that I want to go and see loads of different, like, temples and different religious sites. So for me, it was never taken as appropriation the thing, because I've always appreciated Buddhism and what that stands for. But then obviously we're not Buddhists, so do we have a right?
I think it's very much like, it's okay to appropriate in small doses, but with the understanding of what it means. Yeah. And also just that, like, you also have to, what another thing Emma talks about is that you have to also not just take those, like, tokens, but you also have to stand for, like, what those cultures and, like, beliefs are. So, like, if there's something going on with the marginalization of that minority, for instance, you should stand up and talk about it and not just be like, oh, but, like, I like their pretty symbols. You have to, you know, it has to go hand in hand, in tandem, and that's the way it works.
I think it's also not picking and choosing what you want as well, and also having an open mind and understanding the history of the culture, the reasons why these momentums and symbols exist. And it's not just having an absent mind and being like, that's nice, that's attractive, I'll have that, but having a better understanding and an open mind.
Yeah. It also fits in really nicely with one of our previous issues. Emma again wrote an article about student activism and how students are very much changing the voice of, like, what it is to be an activist at the moment. It was one of those things you don't want to, I can't think what she called it, something to do with Twitter sphere, and I saw it described the other day as #hashtagivism.
Yeah.
but hashtivism. It's so easy to be like, when you're on Twitter and things, be like, I've got a voice, I think this is wrong. but they're not actually doing anything about it. Like, you end up very much just kind of bandwagoning and not actually making any difference in what you're doing.
I think that comes out really well, considering the last few weeks of news with Harvey Weinstein. Definitely. And the Me Too hashtag, like, a lot of people posting it. And again, of course, it was also for, like, ourselves, just for solidarity. But I also think that, like, it's good that quite a lot of people I've seen have now done something about it. They've gone out and, like, worked. They're like, oh, I'm going to try to work to make something better.
Exactly. Like, the second source journalism.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that.
So a group of female journalists, they, I think it started with just two or three of them, but it's become quite a big organization, well, not organization, but
Nicola,
like,
Sturgeon
now.
Talked about,
yeah,
it.
Nicola Sturgeon,
it was in The Guardian, it was,
and
so cool.
Yeah, they've essentially just banded together and said, do you know what, we're not going to just bandwagon and tweet and be like, oh, hashtag me too, like, this has happened to me. We're going to actually do something and create a network for female journalists
and people in the media that have, you know, dealt with this, and kind of give them help and just, like, support, and also, like, legal advice,
I think,
like, seeking help, because it can be quite difficult in, like, such a, like, high-powered industry to speak up about it and without being scared that it's going to affect your career. Journalism is very, like, fast-paced. You have to, you're constantly, like, under scrutiny, but, like, the smallest thing, you can just be out. So I think it's very difficult, but it's so great that people are, like, actually doing something. And I'm so, like, pleased to see that. I've, like, followed the Twitter.
Definitely,
and I'm, like, following everything. It's great. I'm so excited.
Which is the whole point about these kind of manifestos and stuff that are going on social media and everything. Like, it's really good that these things are coming out as a result of these hashtags and everything, which is what you'd hope would happen behind such a large movement of people.
Definitely. And it's, like, it's one of the key themes in the magazine this month, is the theme of allyship. There are so many different forms that can take. So in this magazine, it very much takes the form of like, cultural allyship and, like, allying with, I don't know how to put this, like, different cultures to make sure that we're not just bandwagoning and we're not just being like, oh, we'll support that, but not actually doing anything about it. And I know it's something that we faced when looking at, like, magazine covers, and we're like, I'll give you, like, a sneak peek into next month's, is that we're doing a mental health special, and we were like, oh, well, male mental health is really underrepresented, and we were like, oh, we'll put a man on the cover then. And that's one of those things, it's so easy to fall into that trap of being like, oh, we're helping, we're highlighting something, but unless we're actually doing anything about it, or unless we're writing about it, we're not actually helping at all. We're kind of, like, highlighting it that it exists and then being like, oh, but that's not our place to do that.
It's being,
someone else can pick up the slack.
Being conscious of change and being ready to take a step forward in the right direction.
And
I think,
just to put out there, we did talk about male mental health, and we do have a mental health event going on, so we're not just bandwagoning.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so it's really interesting to kind of play that in.
Indeed.
What else did we discuss in the magazine?
Yeah, we've had a lot of things. One thing that links in with that theme, though, we did have a news story about kind of a march against slavery in London.
We did, yes.
So that's also kind of like, you know, standing together, you know, which is like, isn't that our cover title?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Stand together.
There we go. And yeah, so, like, you know, marching is also a great way of doing that. Like, I think, was it International Women's Day? Like, or like the big women's march in London was wild. It was so great. And so many people. But
yeah, it's so nice to see, like, a culture of campaigning starting to come back. And the fact that, I mean, I never really look at us as a student magazine, besides the fact that our primary audience are students. We don't really act as though we're, like, our fact-checking, everything about our publication is professional. And we cater to such a wider audience that isn't just students, that you forget that we are just a student magazine. But it's really nice that as a student magazine, we've started being like, oh no, we really need to start campaigning for stuff. Like, all of our front covers so far have been campaigns, as are our next few that we've planned out. So it's really nice to see that, like, student activism that was lost for many years with, like, the invention of the internet and people just being like, oh, I can be an activist from lying in bed scrolling through Twitter. I think it started to come back in a bit more of a full force. Definitely taking a different form. It's definitely less radical.
But it's good that it's getting us ready for, like, I know it's easy to get lost in this uni bubble, but these are real things
issues
that are happening in the real world and need addressing and need changing. And the bigger awareness we can get around these stuff, like these kind of events and issues, when we get into that real world and out of the bubble of uni, you know, changes can start happening and hopefully have a better world.
So optimistic, Stephanie.
Since we're talking about change, I was thinking we should talk about our debrief, which
definitely
Stephanie interviewed. Absolutely. Our debrief candidate this issue. I was trying to say term for some reason.
So just as a bit of an FYI debrief, is something that we've recently introduced when me and Stephanie became editors of the magazine. So it's Orbital Magazine's regular sit-down with people who are inspiring change on issues that matter.
Absolutely. And this young lady that I had the privilege of interviewing, Polly Goddard, she is a 16-year-old cancer survivor of leukemia, and she has raised over £140,000 for charity, just like off her own back, as well as the support from her family and stuff. And she's an incredible young woman. I've never spoken to such, I know she's only a little bit younger than me, but she's so much mature in the mind, and she just has
brilliant,
just such an inspiring young woman to speak to.
It's incredible to see, because it very loosely fits in with the theme of allyship, because something appalling has happened to this young girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always think I never know how people like actually survive these things, like not just the illness but like the mental side of things.
Yeah.
Like she discussed with you, like really in depth, about how it's affected, all she wanted to do was go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, like, that ruined her, because she wanted to learn. She was just one of those kids that wanted to get to uni and wanted to learn and was striving for that. And the fact that she didn't let that experience destroy her.
Absolutely.
And she came
not.
Out so much stronger.
Yeah.
But not even that, she helped other people to mm-hmm. go through it, like raising all of that money to support other people like her age and everyone that is having these issues is just phenomenal.
And she also got 2A stars.
Incredible.
Or something.
It's
2A
insane.
Stars, 7 A's and 1 B, like, equivalents in terms of the new system at GCSE.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
She's such an inspiration. And it's just one of those things, again, it's allyship that took a different form. May not be as huge as, you know, let's become an ally to a particular culture or a particular race and make sure that you're standing up for like this enormous change. It was, let's be an ally to something that's really affected me and let's help other cancer survivors. And then she talks about Molly Fest, which was one of the like campaigning events that she helped organize for this young girl that had leukemia. And it's just incredible. Like, this girl is so selfless in her like ambition to help everyone she comes across,
but naturally selfless as well. It was shocking that she was just saying all these things. I said, okay, so tell me about like what kind of work you've been involved with. And she was like, oh, well, I've kind of done this and I've kind of done that as well. And I was like, do you not realize how incredible that is?
Exactly.
And she was like, that was just natural. It was natural for me to be like, okay, I understand the situation I'm in now. I know there's other people that need help. This hospital needs help. I can do stuff about that and I'm going to do it. And she didn't, I don't think she doubted it one minute.
It's
it was
mad.
Incredible.
So she raised over £140,000, but with the other campaigns that she was involved in, altogether, I think it totaled over £215,000.
Mm-hmm.
You hear of people raising these enormous sums of money, and it's, I don't want to say people don't care as much anymore, but it's become one of those things where people are like, oh, that's good.
Yeah.
But it's not taken with such a gravitas anymore. But so I've raised money to go like and help and like, in orphanages and things across the world. I've raised like £7,000, and I thought I was going to fail my A levels. Like, I did no other work. Like, all of my time was spent organising events and doing all these different things. It blows my mind that a 16-year-old girl has helped raise over £215,000.
Yeah.
Like, that is incredible. And she survived leukemia, and she's done that well in her GCSEs.
I was just thinking, as you're talking about fundraising, do you want to talk a little bit about the charity Orbital has chosen and what you just finished?
The pain. So this year we have chosen Orbital's chosen charity. Well, actually, for the first time ever, Orbital's having a chosen charity, so that's really nice. And it is the Cameron Grant Memorial Trust. So Cameron Grant was a student that came to Royal Holloway, and he passed away in 2014 when he committed suicide after having some lengthy mental health difficulties. So it's a charity that's very close to Royal Holloway's heart. So we decided that this year we'd help do something to raise some money and help raise some support and awareness for youth suicide and just generally people having mental health difficulties that they need a hand with, because everyone faces them. And it's something you'll read a lot more about in our next magazine.
It's a really great charity, and it's also great that the RAG Society on campus, Raise and Give, they've chosen them as chosen charity, and the Mental Health Network work really closely with them. So it's really great that all these societies are coming together to work together for the Cameron Grant Memorial Trust and to kind of help this person that and the family that had a tie to Royal Holloway.
Yeah, it's really special.
Yeah. So what did you do?
I don't think it's too soon to talk about it. I did Sober October for Cameron Grant Memorial Trust.
I feel like it's slightly traumatizing for you.
Am I shaking? Yeah, no, it was... I'm really proud that I did it. not just because I managed to give up drinking for an entire month as a student and as a Welsh person, like
just as every cheese.
I mean, not to culturally stereotype, but it's my own culture, so I feel like I can. That's difficult. No, joking. We've raised over £350
for the Grant
Memorial incredible. Trust, which is incredible. As our first fundraiser, we couldn't have expected any more. Like, I initially set the target at like £100, so absolutely thrilled that we've managed to do that. And again, it's one of those things, everything kind of very much ties in with this theme of allyship, which is odd because you don't think of these things as instantly being, oh, that's like this form of allyship. But when you think about it, everything that you're doing to support other people so neatly ties in with the theme of this magazine, which is again why we had so much trouble trying to like cut down the content to fit into the pages, because we just had so much that we wanted to include because it all so nicely fit within like the theme of the magazine and wasn't too heavy to read and was just all so positive.
I was just thinking, flipping through the magazine here, that our comment section is really strong.
It's incredible.
It's strong. Actually really great.
It's very good.
Like, talking about prison, we're talking about millennials, we're talking about gun control, talking about cultural allyship, of course, we just mentioned, and like Hugh Hefner, which is great.
Throw a bit of Hugh Hefner in there.
Yeah.
But again, that is still like an allyship thing, feminism and standing together. Like, we've done well.
Yes. Low-key plug for myself and Emma, where, you know, we were so proud of the design.
The design of this one is
magazine.
Incredible.
We just kind of cried over it when it was done. So we're just like, it's amazing.
I love the front cover so much.
It is good. Got raw Holloway orange in there. I enjoyed that a lot. But yeah,
so that is the first in a series of Orbital Magazine podcasts.
Amazing.
Which is so exciting. So yeah, tune in next month to hear more about our mental health issue. Quick highlights we've got. So obviously we've got a male mental health feature. We've also got a high functioning mental health feature.
Talking about mental health and the creative arts, yeah, and things like that.
It's not going to be as heavy as made out. It's not going to be cover to cover.
Those are just the ones we remember.
Mental health. We've also got our beloved Row Horoscopes are staying. Lots of other light stuff in our lifestyle section. And Debrief will be a great surprise.
And always got Stephanie's puzzles and recipe.
Oh yeah, no more dodgy meatball photos in the next one, I
oh,
promise.
Please. Yeah, so this is gonna be good. I'm excited.
Yeah,
and of course we always got content going out online.
Yeah, definitely check out our website. Yeah, so theorbital.co.uk for content throughout the rest of the month, and be ready to pick up the next magazine on the 22nd of November.
And if you haven't already picked up this issue, like, what are you doing? Because it's amazing, so please
pick it up. It is beautiful and is available on every single building around campus, so make sure you go and pick that up. So yeah, that is it for the October issue of Orbital Magazine podcast. Is it appropriate to appropriate?
Don't know if we actually really answered the question, but it was a good discussion.
Should we attempt to?
Yeah.
Guys.
What do you think?
Is it appropriate to appropriate?
When is it appropriate to appropriate?
When is it appropriate to appropriate?
I reckon if you have an open mind, if you appreciate and know the history and you're doing it in the right way.
Yeah, I agree.
I also agree. I also think that, like, if someone tells you that they're offended, maybe don't do it. But then at the same time, one person can't speak for an entire like group of people.
Yeah. There are also a lot of different ways to appropriate that we haven't really touched upon. Like, some things are just bland offensive. In the news in the last few days was David Walliams dressed up as Kim Jong-un.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think what it was for, some form of party or something, and painted his face and did all this. And I think that's when you've taken it a step too far.
Yeah. Like blackface and like Native American headdresses, I think also.
Yeah.
Like, that's important. That's not okay. But like, so someone mentioned to me, I work at Imagine, and someone mentioned to me that technically it is like appropriation because it's like Taiwanese
that's
drinks
a really
and
interesting
stuff.
Example. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, okay.
It's also just appreciating.
Yeah.
Like, that is.
That's just delicious. It's cuisine. Because exactly, like, in a globalized world, it's impossible not to like take these kind of things. Yeah. Like, obviously, a lot of like British cuisine, I say British in like quote marks.
We have no cuisine.
Yeah. Is that like
fish and chips?
There's like fish and chips and like pie and stuff. But then also like Indian food is a great thing here.
Yeah.
And like tea and stuff, which all came from like
fun fact?
East Asia. Yeah.
We made the chicken tikka masala.
No did way.
It is not Indian. It was invented in Glasgow.
Are you serious?
I am deadly serious.
Oh my god, my life is a lie.
I know. It's like when I went to China.
That's the only thing I eat.
When I went to China, I hunted for the entire month for a prawn cracker. We invented those too.
No,
they do not do
those. Those don't happen.
And also, when you try and describe what a prawn cracker is to a Chinese person, they think you're insane. Because they're like, that is not something that we eat. And I was like, you must do every Chinese in the like in Britain sells prawn crackers.
Yeah. No, I was thinking
that was
my
completely
friend,
off topic.
No, no. I was actually my friend the other day, she was like, oh yeah, I'm ordering Chinese. I'm so excited to have crab rangoons. And I was like, what is that?
I've never heard of that.
And she's like, oh, it's Chinese food. And I was like, no, it is not. I was like, no. And she sent me a picture and I was like, that is not Chinese food. It's like, you know, there's a difference between like British Chinese food and like Chinese food.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, no, I think that's really funny.
Back to the question though.
Yeah, sorry. Oh, yeah. Off topic a bit.
When is it appropriate to appropriate?
I think we're a bit hungry, maybe. I'm a bit hungry.
I'm a bit hungry. I haven't eaten. Spent a long time getting the podcast to work on our first one.
So maybe the answer to that question is if you appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. Fully.
If you understand the nuances behind
it. If you know that what you're doing may be deemed as even vaguely controversial, whether it could be deemed as offensive or not is a whole other question, but if you think it's even going to be controversial, I think you know
maybe
when you're crossing some
line.
Form of invisible line and a boundary that this actually isn't okay. Like, I am actually, like, impeding on someone else's culture and not in a very nice way. But I think displaying like a poster from your travels, if you've done your solid gap year, or if you've got, I don't know, yeah, like a poster or a tattoo or something like that, as long as you appreciate it and as long as you know in your head that you've done it for the right reasons
and you've not just picked and choose what
yeah,
you want
exactly, and if you know like the history behind what you're what you've got and you've got more like more of a deep understanding around it, then it's totally fine. I also think one of the issues that we have is kind of shouting about appropriation. I know we've written this article and it's brilliantly written, but judging other people and being like, I think you're culturally appropriating that, if it is something small like having a Buddhist poster on your wall, I think that's when you start crossing difficult lines that actually, for all you know, their parents may be Buddhist and they might have had such a great like interaction with the religion and they might really appreciate it, but just because you don't know that side of them and you're being like, that's cultural appropriation, I think that's when you end up in a very slippery slope of everything becoming offensive. And I think that's probably where the whole snowflake generation term has come from, is that it's not that we find everything offensive, it's more that we're the quickest to be like,
yeah,
you're doing that wrong, you're being offensive, because we're so aware of everything around us.
I think it's
fine. It can be misconstrued easily.
Completely. I think you're completely right. I think it's finding a good middle ground to a mutual understanding on both parts.
Yeah. Like, as long as you know, for me, you're not appropriating if you know in your head that you're doing it for the right reasons and that you have a proper understanding of it and you really respect it.
Don't judge a book by its cover.
Nice way to end.
Tried.
Tune in next month. We have yet to come up with a
title,
a strap line for episode 2 of Autumn Magazine Podcasts.
Yeah, this has been Abby Cheeseman, editor.
Goodbye.
Stephanie Bagnall, the deputy editor, and I'm co-head of design, Michelle Tile.
See you later.